I don't think that's possible. being short's mine. I'm Wendell. I'm living love by God, and I wouldn't want his job. To be honest, I wouldn't want his job. I'm a real screw-up. Seriously, I am. I'm recovering from spiritual and emotional abuse and addiction to work and food and control. And I've had issues with pornography and alcohol and rage and panic and depression. Amen. So, every once in a while, we come up on a night where I have a lesson. I have something I think that we need to hear that, in my thinking, is kind of pivotal to our life and pathway. And we've done this once before. It was quite a while ago. Right after we printed those little bitty books, Why We Need Recovery. Those are free, by the way. The other books are for sale, but those are free, the little bitty ones. They're saddle stitched, just a pocket type size. And we give them out a lot, and they've been dispersed here and there, and they're given out here at Broadway quite a bit. But the name of the book is Why We Need Recovery, or Why Recovery. Why do we do Pathway? Why does Broadway United Methodist Church have a recovery ministry? And why have we been in existence for like 11 years now? And I just want to kind of talk about that. There's a lot of recovery that takes place in AA and Al-Anon and other 12-step programs. There's a lot of recovery that takes place, good, solid recovery. But something a little different happens in a faith-based recovery. And it's not because we're religious, and it's not because we're holy, and it's not because we're better than anybody else. But it's because at the core of our recovery, and this is a core of all cores. This is probably the bullseye of everything we believe in Pathway. And that is, if I don't have things worked out between me and God, it's impossible for me to have things worked out between me and myself and me and the other people in my life. That the key relationship that needs to be good is between me and God. It doesn't all happen chronologically. Sometimes it happens interspersed. Sometimes it happens jerkily, you know, a little bit here, a little bit there. But at the core, we have come to believe here, and I solidly believe this, that if I'm not good with God, I'm not going to be good with myself, and I'm not going to be good with you. That's where it all has to start. And I don't mean we need to get saved. I don't mean we need to read the Bible more. I don't mean we need to pray more, go to church more often, give more when the plate comes by, go to a foreign country as a missionary, whatever. I don't mean that kind of thing. That's what religion would tell you, that you got to do those things to get good with God. And I did that for years, and it didn't help. It literally did not help. In fact, the more I did it, the further away from God I felt. The more I practiced what organized religion tends to tell us to practice, the further away I felt from God. So there must be something else besides that, and recovery's helped me discover that. Here's how we want to unpack it tonight, and this is even unpacked more in that little booklet there, Why You Need Recovery, or Why Recovery. When you're growing up, there are two channels through which God gets into you. One is the informational channel. If you grew up in church, you went to Sunday school, you went to Bible school in the summer. At our church, we had a thing called CLC. The Baptist church has Awana. There's Kid Zone Live here. There's Rhythm here for the youth group. There are all kinds of systems in place in every church where when you're growing up, they give you information about God. And they tell you Bible verses that back up that information. And so they're feeding your... Does everybody know what I mean when I say the cognitive side of your brain? The thinky side. The 1+1=2 side of your brain. Not that flower smells good brain, that hamburger tastes good brain. That's the other side. But the side of your brain that adds up math and understands biology and remembers historical dates. That side of your brain. The church gives you information that gets categorized in that side of your brain. So you grow up hearing God is this way, this way, and this way. Jesus was his son. He came and lived here. He taught good things. He did good things. He died for us. He resurrected. He promised us the Holy Spirit. It came in the second chapter of Acts, blah, 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 blah. You know, Paul found Jesus and he wrote a bunch of things about what he thought you needed to do to be a good Christian, whatever. So you're fed these kinds of things. You may have had a mentor. You may have had somebody who helped guide you along. You may have gone to a Christian college or something like that, and you had teachers who helped you along. You may have had a scholar or two that you found, and you read their research and you read their information. So you're filling up the informational side of your brain with all kinds of God information. And before long, you have a whole library up there with just volume after volume stacked right next to each other. So you have information about God that you can readily access. What is God like? Blah, blah, let me give it to you. What does God think about this? Blah, blah, let me give it to you. All you do is go into that informational library and pull out a book, open it up and say, it says right here, blah, blah, blah. This is information about God. On the other channel, that's one channel of how you come to know God. The other channel is your experiential channel. Or it's when you grow up. And this is where it gets really messy, and this is where it gets really confusing. Because in my case, I grew up with, and everybody knows Loretta's my sister. I think you know that. She's my sister. We grew up in the same home. There are four sisters and one brother, one guy. For some reason, my father picked me to be the dog to kick. She didn't get that same treatment. So my dad's story is not the same as her dad's story, nor is it the same as my other sisters. They would tell you much different. When I outed my dad as my abuser, the rest of my family rejected me. I only got one left who didn't reject my story. She accepts my story for being my story and loves me and, you know, hugs me. And she's a good sister. I love this sister. So my story is that my father stood in the pulpit on Sunday and said, the Bible tells us that God loves us unconditionally. And then when I got home, I got the you-know-what beat out of me, or I got criticized for everything I did, or, you know, I was at the brunt of his frustration. I literally could, I've told you this before, but we had that slick finish on our garage floor, concrete slick finish, and it was attached to the house. When I heard him turn in and heard the squeak of the tires on that slick finish, my heart would sink. Some days I would be fine. Other days I didn't know what was coming. Other days I'd be sitting watching TV and he'd grab me, literally physically grab me by the ear and drag me out in the garage and tell me to move my bicycle 2 inches because it was parked wrong. That's what I grew up with. So I learned information about God at church and even from my father. I learned information, but my experience, and this is where you have to hang with me. During your formative years, the only thing you know about God comes through your caregivers. Whoever those caregivers were, they were your God reps. And you couldn't, now you can separate. No, they're people and God is this. When you're little, you can't make that distinction. When you're little, whatever they said was from the voice of God. I don't care whether they were believers or not. It doesn't matter. What they said was God talking. That's the way. So if your parents rejected you, or if they abandoned you, or if they abused you, or if they ignored you, or if they, whatever they did, your experience says, this is the way God feels about me. A child makes that assumption. If your parents treat you like a pile of crap, God thinks you're a pile of crap. So you've got this information that you've gathered through mentors, Sunday school teachers, whatever, Bible school, whatever. You've got all this information you've gathered. And over here you've got this experience of your key caregivers and the way they treated you. You know, It's not so much what was taught, it's what was caught. You know, and some of you caught it on the jaw, some of you caught it on the rear end, some of you were hugged. But anyway, you catch this feeling. So the deal is when you grow up, now think about this, when you grow up, the way you feel almost always overrides what you know. Not every time. But you think about times when, okay, you women, when somebody has told you, you're so beautiful. When you were younger, if you were told that you were ugly, you hear the information that person is telling you, you're beautiful. You hear the information, but your feelings say, no, I'm not. Guys, you know, you're raised being told that you're a failure and you do well at work, and somebody says, you did great. You hear the information, you did great, but the feelings, the residual feelings from when you were growing up, override that information. The information becomes obsolete. It's the feeling that overrides it. And so now you're walking around with this. Does everybody know what the word dissonance means? You know certain facts, but you feel just the opposite. And all of this is up in your brain, getting all mixed up. It's doing civil war against each other. I know this, but I feel this way, and they don't line up. That's kind of what Paul, in a sense, what he was talking about in the 7th chapter of Romans, when he said, the good things I want to do, I can't. The bad things I don't want to do, I go ahead and do. This is this dissonance, this mental dissonance, or this brain dissonance, or whatever you want to call it. You've got thoughts and you've got feelings, and they don't line up. When it comes to you and God, this really causes a mess. It causes a huge mess. How come you come to a gathering like this, you know, and people begin to talk about how much they feel God's love, and you say, how come I don't feel that? You know, I hear what you're saying, and I know what the Bible says, and I know what the preacher says, and I know what all these books I've read say. How come I don't feel that? I know what the facts are, but my feelings don't line up with the facts. And think about that. And you take that brainstorm, not a brainstorm as in a good idea, but a brain, let's call it a nightmare. You take that brain nightmare home with you, and you wake up in the middle of the night with it, and you wake up in the morning with it, and you take it to work with you, and you drive home after work with it. You take that brain nightmare all the time. It plays over and over and over, this dissonance between what you know about God and how you feel about God. You take it with, it's chaos. It's absolute mental and emotional chaos. And you say, I can't take it anymore. And so we find ways to medicate it. We got to calm this down. So you drug, you alcohol it, you porn it, you spend it, you work it, you whatever you can do to press down this mental nightmare that you're going through, this battle between what you know and what you feel. You know, it makes you afraid, it makes you angry, it makes you depressed, it makes you uncertain, it makes you ashamed. Fill in the blank, you know. And all of those cry out for some sort of medication. I just can't live with this. If you stop and think about it, and this one takes a while to chase that rabbit to the very end, but when you chase him long enough, you'll find where he ends. I've realized that, okay, I'll just use Robbie, in our marriage. I'm sorry, it's the price you pay for being married to me. So early on in our relationship, everything that went wrong was her fault. I figured out every way in the world why it was her fault, so I could blame it on her. And then I came to believe, kind of early on in recovery, no, it's my fault. It's all my fault. I'm just so messed up. Then I started to think, no, it was my parents' fault, because they messed up with me. And then I came to think, no, it's God's fault, because God gave me those parents. So when I chased that rabbit to the very end, I realized my core beef, my core anger is not with my wife. and it's not with me, and it's not with my parents, it's with God. I've got to get things right with Him. And I don't mean pray more and read more. I mean relationally, He and I got to sit down and have a talk. Literally, a come to Jesus moment. That would fit. Yeah. I've got to sit down and do some heart to heart with God and get this out and somehow get this reconciled. Because when you chase any of your issues, oh, I have problems drinking, I have problems drugging, I have problems panic attack, I have problems with anger, whatever. Chase that rabbit to the very end. Keep chasing that rabbit, and I guarantee you that will ultimately come down as you've got some kind of beef with God. He gave you the wrong personality. He gave you the wrong parents. You grew up in the wrong town. The buck stops with God, and He's a good place for the buck to stop, by the way. He can handle it. He's a big boy. But the buck ultimately stops with God. Okay, so that you've been chasing it. Boom, it finally stopped, and you look up, and it's God standing there. And so now you got a conversation. It's more than one. Several conversations that you need to work through. So it's not your addictions that are the problem. It's not your spouse that's the problem. It's not the people you work with who are the problem. It's really not you that's the problem. It's God that's the problem. He's got to get His stuff together. Well, here's what happens. Come on in. Here's what happens is that when we get into recovery and we get with a group of people who start to get real and start to get honest with each other about all this, we ultimately discover, okay, it wasn't God's fault. Okay, just joking. It wasn't God's fault. But we need to come to the place where we feel free to tell Him we think it's His fault and that we feel like it's His fault. I mean, that he's like Teflon when it comes to that. It won't stick. But we need to try to make it stick for a while. We need to have those conversations, because it's then that we begin to get real about the whole thing and we begin to see the truth about the whole thing. But what we do here in Pathway, which is that the core of the 12 steps, I'm so glad we still do the 12 steps, but here's what we do. With the help of other people, and if you're trying to do this by yourself, I'm going to say it again. If you're trying to do it by yourself or with a spouse, you're doomed to fail. It will not work with somebody. It won't work by yourself, and it won't work with somebody who is emotionally invested in you at the level of a spouse. It's just not going to work. But in community here, you find one or two or three people who you say, "Will you walk with me? I need to start exploring this. I need to start talking about my beef that I have with God. I'm angry at God. I'm disappointed with God. I feel shafted by God." Whatever. You get as honest as you can. Don't play. You can't play around. You got to get dead honest and get with people you trust and say, "This is how I feel about God. This is how I think God shortchanged me," or whatever. And you start talking about it. That's the first thing. You explore and you discover. The very first thing you do in recovery is recovery is 90% discovery. So you have to explore and you have to ask, but you have to have the freedom to ask whatever question you want to ask. See, this is what's kind of hinky about coming out of organized religion. Organized religion tends to tell you certain questions are out of bounds. You're not allowed to ask those questions. When you get in recovery, you have to feel free and be free to ask any question you want to ask. Any question. Seriously. This is what we do every morning in the gathering. You know, if you're part of the gathering on Sunday morning, all questions are legal. So interesting to hear people unpack it outside of a recovery community. It's getting real on Sunday mornings. It's getting real. And it's feeling more and more like Pathway all the time, because people have this freedom to explore and ask questions. That's the first thing you have to do. You have to explore. You have to ask questions. And you can't do it alone. And you can't do it with a spouse. You have to find trusted friends who you can do this with. So you explore. The second thing you do is the fourth step in the 12 steps, is you write it down. There's something that happens. I don't know how many people fish, but you know when you make a great big old cast and you have a backlash in your reel? Anybody ever had that? It's like big bird's nest. Every bit of the fishing line is still there. You didn't lose a shred of it. It's all there. But it's so mixed up you can't make heads or tails out of it. Where's the lead? Where's the end of this? I don't know where it is. Where do I start pulling to get this? So if all you ever do is think about your stuff, it's this bird's nest of fishing line in your head. It's all there, but it doesn't make a lick of sense to you. You don't know where it's come from. You don't know where it's going. It's just there. So the second thing we do in recovery is we say, okay, I'm going to start writing it down. And this is simply a really quick outline of how you do the fourth step. The first thing you do is you write down the name of the person or the event that took place. If you can remember it from your early days, you need to write it down. If it's still caught, I pulled my tooth when I was 5. Okay, that's a memory I have, but nothing happened to my heart when I said that. All right? I was accused of stealing something that I didn't steal. Now, when you think of that, you see what I'm saying? So you start to think of events that you still feel something about. You start thinking about people who, when you say their name, it's like, ooh, okay, that tapped into something. Write it down, the event, the person, write it down, and then say, how did I feel then? How did I feel at that moment? Then say, what have I done to try to ensure that I'll never have to face that again? What have I done in my life? What fences have I built? What arts and crafts have I learned to dodge that? You know, what martial arts moves have I learned or whatever to dodge that, to keep that from happening again? What relationships have I rearranged? What kind of people do I try to avoid so that doesn't happen again? What has happened and I won't go to that place anymore after dark? You see what I'm saying? How did it feel when it happened? And what have I done in my life to keep it from happening again? And then you ask the question, what parts of my character have changed because of this? I've become a recluse. I've become shy. I've got a hair trigger. I didn't used to have one. See what I'm saying? So you start with a person and an event, and then how did I feel then? What have I done to try to guard myself against that? And who have I become because of that? And you start writing down all these events and these people that took place. Sometimes it will take you an hour. Sometimes it'll take you 2 or 3 hours. Just take my word for it. It is worth it. Those of us here who have worked our fourth step say, yes, it is worth it. Absolutely essential to write down the people and the events. So you see what we've done. We've explored and discovered some of these things. Still a glom of fishing line. Step one, just get you started. We're thinking about it. We're discovering it. We're exploring it. Step two is we put pen to paper and we start to write it out. And I told you how to do that. And then the third thing is you need to talk it out. So you take what you've written and you go find somebody. And you say, and not a spouse. You find somebody and say, can I read you my story? And you share your story. The exploration kind of gets the issue out on the table. The writing of it makes sense out of it. It's like you're exploring it. You pour out a box of pickup sticks. And they're all... I'm sorry. Some of y'all don't know what pickup sticks are. Is everybody too young here to know what pickup sticks are? Okay, so you pour out the pickup sticks. Yeah. So that's the first step. You've poured them out. You see them. Okay, I see the issues. I've explored. I've discovered. Now we've gone from the fishing line analogy to the pickup sticks analogy. Okay, now I've got the pickup sticks all here. I see them, step one. Step two is I start to write about them, which means I start to pull them out and organize them. There was this that happened. There was that happened. There was this that happened. Now I've got my pickup sticks organized. They're still there, though, and they're still a little bit intimidating. You know, they're pickup sticks. You know how dangerous they are. You can put an eye out. So they're all laid there, and they're all laid out in front. Now you're going to start sharing these pickup sticks with somebody else, which now they're not dangerous because we broke them all in half. I could use that analogy. But anyway, you start sharing these pickup sticks with, and so they're not confusing anymore, and they're not intimidating anymore. They suddenly your memories of your past are there, but they're not dangerous and they're not intimidating, and they don't control you anymore. You cannot eliminate your story. Your story is your story. But through recovery, your story just becomes your story. It no longer intimidates. It no longer controls. It no longer pulls the string, and you're the puppet that does what it says. That's why we do recovery. We do recovery so that our feelings about God... And by the way, once you get to the end of all this, you realize God's a pretty good guy. And you realize that none of it was God's fault. And you realize that God was there with you the whole time, and every time you got hit, He got hit. Every time you got raped, He got raped. Every time you got cussed out, He got cussed out. Every time you cried, He cried. He's been there the whole time. But you can't... And I can tell you that information, but until you go through these steps, it won't. You can't feel it. Your feelings won't line up with the information I just told you. So what we want to do, recovery is an attempt to get our feelings to line up with what we know, to get them to mesh together instead of being this tug of war in our brain. I don't feel like I did a real good job of this, but I did the best I could, okay? If you haven't picked up one of these booklets, there's a bunch on the table, and then there's a box. The cardboard box there has plenty more. If you want, everything that I've said basically is in that booklet. They're free. If you want to take some, give them out. I know Sally gives them out at Hotel Inc., and others have given them out here and there. So if you want to dig deeper into this or know more about it, you can get one of those booklets. But that's why we're here. That's why we're here. We're seeking to find healing for our emotions so that they'll line up with our thoughts. And that's when I think... In the Old Testament, they used to call that shalom, peace. You ever heard that term? That's that peace that comes. That's that joy that comes. That's the love that comes. That's the... You don't get lazy, but you get a feeling of contentment. Okay, things are lining up the way they should inside of me. And we've been saying this for years and years. The greatest gift that any of us have to offer the world is a healthy version of ourselves. That is the greatest gift we have to offer. We don't have to be a Billy Graham. We don't have to be a great scientist or an astronaut or whatever. We were created to be who we are. And we were created to be healthy as who we are. And that's the greatest gift we can give as mothers and fathers and sisters and brothers and neighbors and work colleagues. So, all right, we got one more song. It's all yours, Mr. Bill.